Welcome to the Sunday AM podcast. We are a church located at the Carrick Centre in Ballincollig. Join us for prayer, praise, teaching and fellowship every Sunday morning at 11 a.m.
Good morning, everyone. It's lovely to see you all and to be here today. And for those of you who don't know me, you can probably tell I didn't grow up here in Cork. And actually, my wife and I moved here from the United States about 6 years ago with the mission or the hope that we could be of help to churches like this one as they pursue their purposes in their communities. And so we've been a part of this congregation since we arrived more than 6 years ago. It's always a joy to be here with you. I want to tell you this morning a little bit about my friend Riley. Riley knows that I'm an ordained minister. He knows that I'm a clergy person. He calls me a man of the cloth from time to time. He knows that I often bring a message like this to a church somewhere in the county. Sometimes I'm actually doing the entire service for some place in the county or somewhere in the country. So I'm kind of going different places doing different things like that. And one day I was meeting with Riley, and he introduced me to a friend of his. And he said, now, Reverend Chuck, this friend of mine, he needs a little bit of religion. I think you should talk to him. And then he said, but not me. He said, not me. He said, I don't want any of that stuff. I'm a lost cause. And Riley often kind of gives me a little bit of grief about this kind of thing. We laugh. I like Riley. He's a great guy. We have a lot of laughs together. And I looked at Riley at that moment and I said, Riley, listen, no one is a lost cause. No one. When it comes to God, there are no lost causes. Our passage this morning is from the first portion of chapter 10 in Romans. And it's here that we learn that God's His sacrificial, extravagant love, His offer of salvation, His invitation into relationship, His willingness to forgive and transform us is for everyone, everywhere. It's not just for some people out there, like they're the people God cares about and that are important to Him, but not for these people over here, not for the lost causes. Like, no, God isn't concerned about them. It's just for those people. No, that's not true. It's for everyone, everywhere. And so at no point during your day or no point during your week or no point during your life will you ever meet a single person for which you could actually say, I'm sorry. The love of God is not for you. The offer of salvation, the willingness of God to forgive is not for you. Because you've done too much. You've gone too far. You've been too bad. I mean, have you been listening to yourself lately? Have you been looking at your life lately? Have you been noticing how you're treating yourself or what you're doing to yourself or you're doing to somebody else? I'm sorry. You're just a lost cause. And the gospel is not for you. It's somebody else. But you're over here. The gospel is not for you. Well, someone might say that about themselves, but God doesn't say that. And actually, neither do we. Because some of us might have thought we were a lost cause at some time. And some of us might have felt like we'd gone too far, we were too bad, we'd done too much, or we hadn't done enough. But the gospel was for us, too. And we wouldn't be here today, and we wouldn't know Jesus, and we wouldn't have this life with Him if the gospel was not for everyone, everywhere. And when Paul thinks about this, he thinks about this universal offer of salvation to anyone and everyone. Suddenly, his mind begins to go like this, because this is not an abstract thing for him. It's not just everyone everywhere, but it's also somewhere and someone. And he thinks about his own people, and he longs for them to live by the gospel. This isn't a faceless or a nameless or an impersonal theological concept for him. It is intensely personal for him. And when Paul ponders this truth about the gospel, there are names and faces and people and relationships that suddenly come to the forefront of his mind. And then something happens. Something deep happens inside of him. Something almost visceral happens inside of him. Something emotional. And that's why in the very first verse, he writes this. Brothers and sisters, those of us who follow Jesus, those of us who were spiritual orphans but have now been adopted into the family of God, those of us who are spiritually connected to each other as brothers and sisters in this family of faith, my heart, my desire, my passion, the thing that he said in chapter 9 that brings actually agony to him when he thinks about it, and the focus of his prayer, the intensity of his prayer is for his own people, that they would respond to the gospel and be saved. See, it's not this impersonal thing out there, some theological thing. This has become deeply personal for him. It's the best possible news that he can think of. And yet, he's torn, he's broken. He cannot think about the gospel. He cannot think about that without thinking of his friends and his family and his community and his tribe and his ethnic group. He knows that they are not in a right relationship with God, and that brings him pain. And he has this pain in his heart because they have been both resisting and rejecting the gospel, and he has a deep concern for them, a deep concern for their eternal destiny, and that's why he's so desperate. And that's why he's so passionate. When he thinks about his people, in many ways he's thinking, they're good people. They're good people. And they're sincere people. And above all, they're religious people. And I love them. I love my people. They're passionate, oh yeah, and they're zealous, of course, and many of them are very religious, but their confidence, he says, is in the wrong place. They have an approach to life in general, an approach to their spirituality in particular, that cannot deliver what they think it will deliver. It's as if they're trying to put their weight on something that was never intended to hold their weight. They're standing on something or sitting on something that was never intended to hold them up, and eventually it crashes. Or it's like a sheet of ice on the river, and you think it's strong enough that you can walk on it, and so you go out there and you walk on it, but you discover it's not strong enough, and you go crashing through the ice into the water because the ice cannot support. It cannot deliver what you think it will deliver. And Paul knew people who needed the gospel. And I have people like that too. There are people that I know and people that I love and people I care desperately about, and they think they're doing the right thing. And unfortunately, they're mistaken. They need the gospel of grace, but as Paul says, they are pursuing a gospel of works. And I know you have people like that in your life too. People you grew up with, people you do life with, people you work with, people you go to school with, people you live near, people you do business with, people in your town, people in your community that you know and you care about. And they too, many of them, need the gospel of grace. And then sadly, some of them have their confidence in the wrong place. And so as Matt reminded us last week, for some people we know that confidence is put into religious rites and ceremonies rather than the gospel itself. Now, last Friday, I was talking to Brian. And we were chatting about a number of things for quite a while. And then eventually we began talking about spiritual things. And in the midst of that conversation, he put his hands up like this. He wasn't praising Jesus. He just put his hands up like this. And he said, look, I know I'm a sinner. And internally, I just took a step back and I went, wow. The honesty to be able to say that publicly out loud. I thought, how many of us would have that kind of vulnerability and honesty? Say, yeah, I know I'm a sinner too. And he said, I know I'm a sinner, but it does not matter. Then he said, I can sin as much as I want, and God will forgive me because I, and then he went on to talk about the religious ceremonies of his past. I thought, oh my goodness. I think that's just the kind of person Paul was talking about in the book of Romans. People who put their confidence in things other than the gospel. For some of them, Paul said, they were looking at their ancestry. My parents were part of this faith, and then their parents and their parents. And actually, it goes all the way back to this guy named Abraham. We're part of this tribe. Like, surely that counts for something. Or he talks about those who put their confidence in their own festivals and ceremonies and rituals that they had gone through. And maybe you know friends like that, like my friend Brian. Maybe for some of our friends, it's something different. Maybe they think they know the right way to make this work, and they'll tell you it's all going to work out in the end. You just watch and see, because I'm basically a good person, and I'm working hard to be a good person, and I'm doing my best to be a good husband or a good wife or a good parent or a good employee or a person of charity, a person of justice, a person who's ethical, a person who does the right thing, and it's all going to work out in the end. You just watch and see. And they might say, maybe I don't have a relationship with God, but I'm doing lots of good, kind, compassionate things, and that's got to count for something. Doesn't my zeal, doesn't my sincerity, doesn't my good stuff count? Last March, I was having a conversation with Douglas. You know, it was right around Patrick's Day. And I reminded Douglas about the story we have about Patrick from his writings. And in that main writing, Patrick tells us he had at least two dreams that were clear messages from God for him. Unmistakable message from God in a dream. And in one dream, he says he was to leave Ireland and go back to the place he was taken from and return to his homeland, run away, escape. And he did that. And then he tells us that years later, sometime later, there was a second dream that came, and that dream told him to come back here. To come back here with the gospel so that people could be saved. And he did that. And I said, Douglas, do you believe that God does that still? Do you think God still talks to people? Do you think that God still has a message for people? Do you think God can still give them a direction to people? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And then he said this, I don't think it matters what you believe about things like that. As long as you are a good person and doing your best, that's all God can expect from you. And honestly, I thought to myself, that sounds so reasonable. Doesn't it? Like, you know, I'm doing my best. Surely God can overlook a few things. I'm trying hard. It sounds reasonable. It sounds really good. And then I thought, actually, that's so deceptive. I thought of this text from the book of Proverbs. We find it in both chapter 14 and 16. There is a way that appears to be right. It seems to be reasonable. It seems to be, yeah. But in the end, it's not. It leads to death. Oh, it sounds so reasonable, doesn't it? But it's deceptive because the end of it is not eternal life, it's eternal death. And then I asked Douglas, I said, okay, so here's the thing. Where's the tipping point for you? He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, where's the line? Okay, so you're trying hard to be a good person. You're going to be a good person. It doesn't matter. God will make it all right. But where is the line between good enough and not good enough? Like, when do you know you've done just enough good to cross that line? He said, I don't know. And he said, well, how do you know then? He said, well, wait a minute. What if I gave away a lot of money? What if I was really generous? What if I gave a lot of money to charity to help people who are poor and all that? And he said, that's got to count for something, right? And I said, well, then again, Douglas, where is the line? Where's the tipping point? You know, if you had just given one more euro, you would have been in. But you missed it by a euro. Like, how do you know? And it was as if, I think, he was illustrating the third verse here, what Paul is saying in verse 3. Since they did not know the righteousness of God, they were trying to do it on their own. They were trying to establish their own righteousness before God. Now, let me pause for just a moment here, because I don't want to be misunderstood, and I don't want Paul to be misunderstood, and I don't want the scriptures to be misunderstood. What Paul is not saying is that works of charity, generosity, kindness, and compassion are not good, that we should not be good people, pursuing people of being people of justice and mercy and compassion, and we should not be people who grow in that. In fact, as Katie mentioned during our prayer time, that should characterize who we are. When people think about us as the people of Jesus, that's the way they should know us. That's not what Paul's saying here. What Paul is saying here is that when it comes to our eternal relationship with God, that doesn't matter. The righteousness of God comes from him, not by our own efforts. And almost in desperation, Douglas looked at me and he said, "All right, where's the line? Tell me, how do I know?" And I said, "Well, it's about the free, unmerited gift of God that comes by faith and because of grace. It's not about being good enough, Douglas, because none of us could ever be good enough." Now, at this point, I think we could take the position that I know a fair number of people take, right? Okay, so it goes like this. Listen, that's their thing. And it's okay. They seem to be happy. Life seems to be going okay for them. Let them do what they think is right. That's not my thing. I've got my thing. I love Jesus. I'm following Jesus. I'm doing everything I know to live a life that pleases God and pleases him and serves people and kind and compassion. That's not them, but they seem to be okay. I'll just let them be and I'll do my thing. Or we could take the position that Paul has here. My heart's desire, the thing that just breaks me up, the thing that focuses my prayer, the thing I am so desperate for, is that they would be saved. That they would move from this place of darkness and coldness into the warmth and light of God's love. Because we have this passion for their eternal destiny. And then in verses 4 through 8, and then in 6 and 7, Paul begins to demonstrate that this idea of the universal offer of the gospel is not a new idea. It's actually rooted in the Old Testament. And so he quotes a few passages, a few verses from the Old Testament, as if to say, you know this. You grew up with this. These are things you're familiar with. You should already know this in your head. In fact, you should be so familiar with it, it should come out of your mouth. You should be able to explain it. This is not a new idea. It's rooted in what you already know. And it's not a secret either. You don't need some super spiritual, mystical experience to figure this out. You don't have to ascend to heaven and find Jesus there and bring him down and say, now explain it to me. You don't have to go down to the grave and maybe find Jesus there, bring him back up and say, now explain it to me. It's not a secret. It's not hidden. It's right there. It's no mystery. It's in the open for anyone to see and hear and believe. Just follow the way that you have been shown. It's already in your mouth. It should be. Well, what is that way? What is the way that they should already know? Well, it's actually in verse 9. And Paul says it's not that complicated. It's actually very straightforward. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, the Lord of your life, you've surrendered to him, you have walked away from the things that you know are not pleasing to him, and you've set your life on the course of living for him as if he was the Lord of your life. If you do that, and you believe the gospel, that Jesus not only lived, but he died, and he rose again to secure your salvation, you will be saved. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, not that complicated. And then in verse 13, he ends this section with this lovely affirmation again. everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And when it comes to the gospel, it doesn't matter if you were raised in a Jewish environment like Paul was, or you were not raised in a Jewish environment, the gospel is for you. God richly blesses anyone and all who call on him. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, or what you did or what you didn't do. The gospel is for you. You see, my friend Riley is not a lost cause. Even though he's lived a life far from God, even though he's done some pretty bad things, even though I've heard him say some pretty mean things, and even though I know enough of his life to know he's really blown it a few times, he's not a lost cause. The gospel is for him. Or you might think, somebody might think, well, surely God sees somebody like Riley and says, well, just wait, you'll get yours. I'm just waiting to punish you. That's what I'm going to do. No, the good news is this. For those who turn, for those who confess, for those who repent, there is a wide open door of forgiveness and acceptance. Even after we've blown it, even after we've made mistakes, even though we've done everything we've done or not done, just turn to the Lord. He is gracious and compassionate. He is slow to anger and abounding in love. It has always been God's desire to bring people out from the cold into the warmth of his compassionate love. So, now that we have this understanding, I guess, I want to go back to that first verse. Brothers and sisters, my heart's desire and prayer is that the Israelites might be saved. How does that verse ring for you? When you put your people in front of your own mind, front and center, your family, your neighbors, the people you work with, go to school with, do sports with, the people you hang out with, the people in your estate, the people in your town, what's happening in your heart? You bring those names and those faces to the forefront of your mind. What's happening here? And what's happening with your prayers? Last week, Matt mentioned that something should be stirring inside of us when we consider this. Paul agonized over those that he knew. Last week, Robert also gave us an opportunity, a quiet space in our morning service to pray for those who were far from God, who still needed the gospel of grace. And so my encouragement is keep praying. Keep your heart soft. Or maybe this morning you realize something else. Maybe you realize that you've been passive, uninterested, or unconcerned about those you know who need the gospel. You've been asleep. You've been asleep to their eternal destiny. And maybe it just doesn't even bother you. Or maybe this morning you're beginning to wake up and realize that there is a reason you are that person's friend. There's a reason that person is your neighbor. There's a reason you work at that place. There's a reason you're in that classroom with that person. Maybe there's a reason why you have these connections with these people, because you are the person to pray for them and maybe have a word about the gospel. Now, Paul's going to continue this. He's not done with us. He's been messing for 10 chapters, messing with our lives. And he's going to continue. And the next part of this chapter will continue this thought about the gospel and the need that people have for it. And we're going to look at that, not next week, but the week after when we continue our series in Romans.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to know more about the Sunday AM service, visit our website at www.cupcork.ie or follow us on Instagram at Sunday AM Cup Cork. Our church services are held on Sunday at 11 a.m. in the Carrig Centre in Ballincollig.